We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Welcome to another edition of the Howard Eskin podcast. And yes, you are riding with the king. Back to do another podcast with a guy that I think has always been very, very interesting. I think some of the things that he did, people had the wrong perception, and we'll address it. The monument he erected for Nick Foles in his locker, and people can't get over, well, he likes Nick Foles better than Carson Wentz. We talk about that, but I want to just deal with that right now. The idiots, and they are idiots, and Chris and I will talk about it, that don't give Carson the credit that he deserves. He's not perfect. Tom Brady's not perfect. Aaron Rodgers is not perfect. Joe Montana, who I think was the best in football ever. I think he's the GOAT. You can have Tom Brady all you want, but Montana never lost a Super Bowl, never threw an interception in the Super Bowl. But the reality is, regardless of how good a player you are, players make mistakes. And I still don't know why. I have no clue why there's people that still don't give Carson Wentz credit. And again, I know he's not perfect. But without Carson Wentz, the Eagles would not have made the playoffs. Without Carson Wentz, the season would have been a disaster with all the players that they had to add. But it is a unique situation. A quarterback has to be a leader to overcome a lot of the things that the Eagles have overcome, and Carson Wentz was a big part of it. So we'll talk about that, and I talk about that with Chris Long. Now, reality, these young players, and we talk about that too, have added something. I would have never believed it, but then watching it and watching players go down and watching all the injuries, and yet the Eagles still win games. And I know the NFC East stinks. The Cowboys probably have the most talent, but they're such a dysfunctional organization. They'll never win with Jerry Jones running it, and they'll never win with Dak Prescott as the quarterback. And people that still don't believe that Carson Wentz is a better quarterback, he doesn't put up hollow numbers, is a better quarterback, and I can go through all the statistics, and why go through it? You've heard them all. But Carson Wentz is better. He's a top 10 quarterback. He's not the best. He's not in the top 5, but he's clearly in the top 10. There's a big fan that I'm about to talk to, and that's Chris Long. All right, from one genius to another, I don't know who would be the top genius, but that would be Chris Long. I miss you. I know people here in Philadelphia miss you, but today and after that game on Sunday, which we're doing this on Monday, it's exciting the way the Eagles won, and I know you follow every game. Chris, what is and first of all, thanks for doing this. What is the thing that you notice most about this team? Because I know you watch all the games.
Well, it feels like a team that plays best in these situations. And, you know, I talked to somebody earlier about this. I was on The Ringer with Ryan Russillo, and I get to do my victory lap and gloat about the Eagles. But it's not really a victory lap because this team expects to win a playoff game. And I actually expected to, even with the depletion at so many positions. But Doug Peterson's, like, point of difference as a coach, and all great coaches have them, as you talk about coaches getting axed today and new ones and like what makes them good, some of these coordinators, what makes Doug great, and he's delivered in 3 or 4 years with really stacked odds in some situations, is just his ballsy attitude and his even-keeled kind of attitude where when the chips are down, he doesn't create panic. And in a lot of locker rooms, panic is very palpable in the NFL, and Doug does not allow that to happen. And that permeates down to the players. Now, would you like to get out off to better starts? Sure. And the injuries have been crazy, but this has been a masterful job by Doug. You know, he gets dinged when the offense isn't working. The last month has been sort of unprecedented, and it's been when it's absolutely been needed, and Carson's a whole another deal. But I think the biggest thing is that they're a resilient team. They have that underdog DNA in them, and this is more par for the course, you know, hosting a playoff game, and everybody wrote you off about a month ago.
Chris, again, it's an interesting comment. Doug Peterson, and you played for Bill Belichick for 1 year. It seems like they're different personalities, but how does a coach, and focus on Doug Peterson for, as the first part of this, get players to buy in and have the respect, yet they seem to like, at least that's the way I see it, and you played here, they like Doug, yet they still respect him. How does a coach do that?
It's not a ABC explanation. It's very gray. I mean, like, personalities are complex, and coaching is a lot about personalities. It's about X's and O's, but it's also about, like, what do you read the guy as? And the hardest place to fool is an NFL locker room. And, you know, good luck fooling 10-year vets in the NFL. They're some of the most cynical, seen-it-all people. And Doug, you know, doesn't come across as a guy who's trying to fool you. Doug is a guy who's going to be honest. He's going to be even keeled. He's going to take care of you when it's right, but he's going to work you hard. And Doug is so cool that, you know, you'll be working harder than any team in the league in some situations. You know, camp is not a breeze. Like, you know, practices are tough, and we are pushed to work hard. You know, I say we, the Eagles work. But the whole time you're like, I love my coach because the tone he sets from a personality standpoint and the way he treats you and respects you as a man. So, I think that's the key. He doesn't strike anybody as, you know, a used car salesman, which a lot of coaches are. And guys buy in. And guys are motivated to play anyway, so that thing's exaggerated sometimes, like playing for a coach. But it sure makes things easier from a cohesion standpoint and from a chemistry standpoint when a coach is truly respected, not just feared. By players, because all coaches have a bunch of rules, and Doug had some rules that I was like, this is not a rule. I don't care for this rule, but like, because it's Doug, I'll make a little bit of an extra effort to do this mundane thing, because that's something that's his thing. And all coaches have little things that they nitpick on, even, and just me as a vet, that's a perfect example. Like, I've been in the league a long time. I've done a lot in the league. Like, for me to get somewhere new and my shirt wasn't always tucked in, but like, he cares about his shirt being tucked in practice. I'm like, that to me doesn't make any difference. But because it's Doug, I'll at least, like, when he comes over and tells me to tuck my shirt in, I'll make an effort. Now, he'd probably laugh and say, Chris didn't have his shirt tucked in barely ever, but I would at least try, because, you know, that's a little thing that the guy I respect likes. And although I might not think it's a big deal to him, it means something. So you try to do it.
Chris, could you imagine this team? I mean, think about, you know, I'm watching the game on Sunday. Obviously, I'm standing on the sidelines. I see players that I haven't even seen before. I don't know if they found them in a grocery store. I don't know where they found them. I mean, the wide receiver number 16, and I still can't remember his name.
Dude, Burnett.
Yeah, Burnett.
I was at a sports bar yesterday in Florida, because I'm down here for the Orange Bowl, and I screamed out all by myself. By the way, I'm at a sports bar all alone. watching the game, but I had a good time. I was right on the beach. So, I screamed out, I was like, who the F is that? I mean, he caught a big ball. And Greg Ward is leading team in receptions. And you know, Miles Sanders is obviously a rookie who would have got a lot more attention had he not been there with Saquon.
Right.
Has been just – he looks like a generational talent. But they've just come up with all these new options. Perkins, the ball across the field to him. You know, you're in 12 personnel so much, and then Ertz lacerates his kidney. Like, what are you going to do? And they find a way to stay in 12. They find ways, and I think this is one of the biggest things about Carson. And I've been on Carson's support team all year, and some of y'all idiots got first take duped,
yes,
biting the cheese on, you know, Carson's the problem, this, that, and the third. And I'm not talking to you. I'm talking some of the Twitties out there, as you call them.
Yeah.
Howard, but,
yeah, exactly.
You know, he's and he's clearly part of a long-term solution. And the best thing that he did this year, if I had one critique, was to not try to overextend plays sometimes. He's got such a generational talent from an arm and athleticism standpoint. Sometimes you won't do that all the time. And they're, like, he's learned to pick the moments where he has to make that throw to Perkins. And the yards per attempt are down. What other choice does he have? Since Deshaun went out, the field has shrunk. So when he realized I have to manage sometime, that's when I think he really grew up and took a huge step forward.
You know, the people that ripped and criticized Carson Wentz because he wasn't good enough are complete morons. You know, all this hot take nonsense. They really are. They're dopes and morons. But you're a guy that obviously played in the league for a long time. You've played with Carson Wentz. You played with Nick Foles. I don't know that everybody will completely let Nick Foles is legendary, and he's great, and I love the guy. However, when you look at talent, I mean, can you tell people that Carson is really just a better quarterback?
Well, I think when I talk about quarterbacks and ceilings, and Nick has a lot of things that have, like, I think any quarterback, the scheme is very dictating. The scheme and the context, like, we judge quarterback as if there's, like, no context around them. You know, like, as if the coordinator doesn't matter, as if, you know, a bunch of guys being hurt doesn't matter. The offensive line. And you look at Nick Foles' career, he's had, like, rock bottom moments, and he talks about them at length. You know, in St. Louis, I was there for one of them, where he wasn't great, and he's had historically relevant statistical output years where he was, like, in Philly under Chip, lighting it up. And now he got benched in Jacksonville, and he also led us to a Super Bowl, and he's a legend and a hero. So, like, quarterbacks, there's a lot that rides on what's going on around them. And Carson's talent is one, and I think Nick would tell you this, Carson's arm and his athleticism, like, those are things he has on Nick, and he has on most quarterbacks on the planet, and there's only so many. It's on coaches to get the best out of somebody like that. Once you show that, like, 2017 thing, it's not like Carson's not trying to play well when he has a dip. What's going on around him? You know, like, what can coaches do to add elements to his game or to manage some of the deficiencies around him? Like, that's how I judge quarterbacks, is, like, their ceiling, what I've seen from them. And Carson's ceiling is so high. So to think you'd ever move on for somebody with that talent, for what and for who? And you're going to watch him walk out the door. He'd be on some of these teams right now that made the playoffs and are deficient at quarterback. You put him on the Steelers right now, the Steelers win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, if you change him, like, people, they talk about Dak Prescott. If you put Carson with those receivers, the Cowboys are a mess anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it would be unbelievable. Now, people think, Chris, you were more of a Nick Foles guy because of the monument that you erected
that's
in
so
your
funny.
Life.
That's so funny. I know. That's the funniest thing. Well, I can't help if people take shit. I can't say shit here.
That's all right. It's
okay. People take stuff. If people take shit too seriously, it's a locker room joke. All I do is play pranks, and, like, I like to keep it light. Part of the thing is, like, when the chips are down, you want to keep things light. And, like, literally, if anybody's watched Major League with Joe Boo,
right?
That's where that came from. So we were like, we were having a rough day. Like, we lost Carson. You know, there was a need to keep things light in that locker room. And, like, we were just having fun with certain different things. So, that, like, we built that shrine on a whim. I sent some of the equipment guys to go get prayer candles, like, during practice. And we were all laughing. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I can't control the way, and we can't control the way, like, fans perceive what's going on in the locker room. But there's so much love for Carson, and I was so excited that Brooks stood up and, like, really talked at length about it, because he's probably your best offensive player, him and Lane, right?
Yeah.
Those are your studs. And Brooks is a high-character dude. He's a great teammate. He's a superstar in the league. If he weren't a guard, everybody would know exactly who he was. And for him to stand up there at length, like, a week or two, and talk about it for, like, a minute or two, I thought that was huge. And I hope more guys do that, because Carson is a guy who demands a lot of respect by how hard he works, prepares, and loves his teammates.
You know, the young players, how does the team win? I mean, think about who they've had or who they have out there. Guys who were on the practice squad, either during the season or beginning of the year. How does that happen for a team? What creates that dynamic?
The dynamic of guys just stepping up. I think sometimes teams and players have to hit like rock bottom, right? Like you really need to tear off the Band-Aid sometimes. And I think, you know, some guys got hurt. These young guys gave people a fresh look. Maybe we didn't realize as Eagles fans, or like maybe even Eagles talent evaluators, didn't realize that these guys are pretty good. You know, maybe Greg Ward is, there's a ton of undrafted guys, former quarterbacks who had good careers to great careers as receivers and all types of other things. Like we know the guys, and Greg Ward could be a guy that plays a long time in the league. Like, you know, we're just seeing the beginning of some of these guys' stories. Like Perkins, people knew he was very talented. We all thought he was talented. So him stepping up is not a huge surprise, but it just doesn't, it's still remarkable that he's doing this. And Boston Scott, like, yeah, he didn't have a ton of yards per carry yesterday, but 3 touchdowns in a pivotal game to send the Eagles to the playoffs. If you'd have told me that last year, what would the odds have been there?
Right.
I mean, like, I just said you were crazy. No disrespect to Boston. I mean, I'm so happy for him, but I never would have saw this coming.
You know what? Jason Kelce said, I guess it was a week or so ago, I think it was after the Cowboys game, he said, the young guys and other players have said this, the young guys have brought an energy, and it's a different energy, which created a new vibe. And Kelce said that when he was with Andy Reid, he always wanted to mix in young players with the veterans to kind of bring that different kind of energy to a team. Do you believe that has worked in this case? And why does that work?
I do. I think it's worked. I think after you win a championship, you don't try to break the group up. You try to keep the core together. But, like, in general, you should always inject, I think, in a locker room, young, hungry dudes. And, you know, old guys are great. We bring a lot to the table, but we also can be, like, some moody, like, you know, fed up, you know, ornery old dudes. Like, for everything good we bring to the table, it's nice to balance that with, you know, young guys who are jaded and haven't seen it all and are excited every day to get to work. And are literally, some of them are living at extended stay hotels. Like, that's like the NFL thing that people don't realize is a lot of the young guys who don't have these big contracts, they're not living like you think about NFL players. Like, you know, this is a very real struggle to them still to try to turn this into a career that can sustain for a long time. So having those young, hungry dudes is a big difference than having guys like myself who've been in the league 10, 11 years. We bring things to the table, certainly, but it's nice to balance it.
You know, you guys, when you won the Super Bowl with the Eagles, had an unbelievable, I thought, the best chemistry I've ever seen in an Eagles locker room, and I've covered this team for a long time. Things have changed. Players always change. Do the young players kind of help bring with that help bring that chemistry together? Because they're working, the vets are working harder with the young guys. Is there something to that?
You know, I think in general, it's always good to push players. I mean, that's not to, like, you don't just, you know, try to disrupt somebody's confidence by, you know, pressing them for playing time. But it's right. Always good in this league to have young players that push them. You know, like, for me, as an older guy, I'm not only, like, when I got to Philly, I was not only trying to prove that I still had it, and that can be really hard coming to a new team as a vet, obviously, but also when a young guy like a Josh Sweat comes in or Derek Barnett, like, those guys push me. You know, I'm working as hard as I can anyways, but it helps to see guys with real talent, you know, pressing you for snaps or, you know, competing against those guys. It keeps you young. And I also really like their energy. Like, I just, like, when I was an older dude, I liked working with the younger guys because, you know, it's a blank canvas, and it's fun. They're having fun. This is a dream for them. The dream hasn't gotten old. It never really gets old, but you know the difference between a guy that just walked in has been around for a decade. So,
yeah, Chris, you said you like the Eagles. I think the Eagles have the perfect opponent for them to win in the first round with Seattle. And you, at the beginning, you said you do like the Eagles to win.
I mean, like, I don't think it's out of the question. If you had told me a month ago that they would, I'd have said, well, they could slide in, but I don't think they're going to win a playoff game. Like, now I think they can. And, you know, listen, they already beat the Packers, who I don't think are very good in at Lambeau. They played Seattle tough. Now granted, there were two big missed opportunities for Seattle that could have made that game look a lot different. The overthrow to Hollister, I think, in the back right corner of the end zone. Mm-hmm. And then I think Metcalf dropped the ball in the end zone or at the goal line that would have been two more touchdowns for them. And then also, like, this matchup's going to look way different. That first game, Ertz was targeted, I think, 14 times. So Ertz is probably going to be out, right?
It's going to be really close. Yeah, it's going to be tough, but it's going to be close.
So that could be different. I mean, even if he plays, he's not going to get targeted 14 times. Now, your right side of your line, what's going to happen there with Brooks' dislocated shoulder, Lane? That, I think if I remember correctly, is a constant there because they were missing the first contest. But what Seattle didn't have to take advantage of that was Clowney, who was out. Now, Clowney's only had three sacks. I've never seen somebody, you know, on an ISO cam so much with three sacks in my life, but that's what it takes for people to realize his generational talent. That's what it takes for people to pay attention to somebody who doesn't have eye-popping sack numbers. You talk about it with Brandon Graham a lot. Like, he's not like a 15 sack guy, but he's extremely disruptive. And Clowney has been that for them all year. Now, this is where he makes his money. It's a lot like the Frank Clark thing in Kansas City. I really believe that Frank Clark had six sacks, went to the Pro Bowl with six sacks, but he endured a lot of criticism this year because he wasn't coming on early. Would you rather have him come on the first month of the year or in the playoffs when it matters? And I think, you know, Clowney, Clark, guys like that, edge guys who signed big contracts, regular season's great. They were disruptive, didn't have the big numbers, but this is showtime for them. And I think that's who, if the Seattle Seahawks want to pick up this one on the road because they've limped over the finish line, they need Clowney to just terrorize the Eagles.
If I told you that Seattle for the season was only plus +7, would you believe me?
Yeah, I would, because they've kind of been that team, and it totally depends on the way you look at things. It's funny. We freak out when somebody hasn't played in a close game, like Clemson in college football, right? And we say that's a strike against them. And then now some people with Seattle are like, yeah, they're not that good. They're only plus +7. Point differential, if that's what you're saying, and they won a ton of one possession ball games. Well, they're battle tested, and they won a lot of different ways too. But Seattle is also really prone to implosion. Like, their four biggest games this year, save for last night, they gave up a score on defense or on special teams. And you know, Carson, who's out, is fumbled a lot. They also ran the ball for 176 on the Eagles the first time. That's probably not going to happen again. You know, they're a lot different. That Penny injury was huge. So it's going to be a totally different game. It's hard to call, but I keep telling people, like, you can do anything at the link. Like, you're Superman at the link. So here's your one shot, you know. You have Philly behind you for one game guaranteed. So, I mean, that's it.
Yeah, and obviously the home crowd, and these fans have traveled unbelievably anyway. But you talked about how good a player Brandon Brooks is. Now they're going to miss him. He's obviously done for the year. He's going to have surgery. And Lane Johnson, I think, has a good chance of being back. But how much do you think that they'll miss Brooks?
Huge. I mean, it's a huge, you know, it's not the – I mean, Reed's a good player, Jaren Reed.
Yep.
It's not like – had you played San Francisco the first game, I think that'd be the worst draw for a lot of reasons. You would rather see Garoppolo on the road in a playoff start over Russ, who's obviously the X factor, and this is his most brilliant work to date to carry this thing. I've said it all year long. Seattle's a tough team, but they're not very good, if that makes sense. Like, they've overachieved, to your point. And you'd rather see their front, even with Clowney, probably, than the San Francisco front, who, by the way, the coverage hadn't been as good, and they haven't been getting home, so that's why they were making a lot of noise early in the year. Still a good group. I think you can survive it. But you're gonna have to commit to running the football. And Miles Sanders, I don't know what the deal is with his ankle.
He's gonna feel next week. Yeah, he's got a chance to come back, but obviously they need him.
I mean, he's the most important player on the team. So,
Chris, you know, you only played. I never talked to you about this. I'm not a Belichick guy, although I know he's got two sides to him. He can be a really nice guy, and I was in a unique conversation with him one time and didn't talk football for 15 minutes, and he didn't know me from the man on the moon when the Eagles trained up there. But we had mutual friends. So he talked to me, but I see the way he treats the media. But why did you only stay with the Patriots for 1 year?
It was all scheme for me. It was funny when people, I played a lot of the year at three technique at like 264 pounds. Mm-hmm. When I got there, I thought I'd be basically rushing and playing outside backer. Things kind of changed with the scheme. We started off the year kind of in a lot of 4-3 looks, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm playing. If you watch the first two games of the year, Miami and Arizona, I was killing it. Like, I was like, okay, this is going to be a hell of a year for me. And then it was still a really good year, but I was playing inside a lot. We kind of played with me as a three technique, and then eventually Trey Flowers came on. So he cut into my first and second down snaps a ton, but I was still cool as long as I was rushing. And then in the playoffs, I really became, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Sorry, I'm just picking up my Orange Bowl tickets.
That's right.
Another Virginia Cavaliers flex here.
Yeah.
We're in the Orange Bowl.
That's all right. I hope they win.
Yeah, me too. But basically, like, by the end of it, in the playoff run, I was kind of a pass rush specialist. Like, so, Super Bowl, I played about 20 plays, which for me, I was really happy with that experience. I loved it. I loved my teammates. It was a historic win. But at this point, I was like, okay, now I've won. And one thing I've been waiting to do since I got on IR 2 years in a row, like, I had 40 sacks in 4 years in St. Louis. I was rolling. But my ego was kind of like, man, I need to prove I'm good again. Two IR years in a row, and then I'm cut, cap casualty. Like, I want to go out on top. So I just had to leave and do the right thing for me. Like, at my body north of 33, I'm not going to hold up a three technique. So it wasn't personal. I still talk to those guys. I really like the people up there. But, man, I was lucky I made that decision.
You know what? I've heard a couple of players, not a lot, that say they didn't have fun playing under Bill Belichick. If you had to pick a coach to play for, and this puts you on the spot, but I know you're a straight-up guy. If you had to pick a coach to play for, who would it be, Belichick or Doug Peterson?
Well, so it would probably be Doug because of the scheme. Doug's allowed, he hired Jim. And Jim's scheme, for whatever it's worth, fits my talent. So, I mean, they're both very different. I learned so much about, like, Bill would do like an hour meeting every Monday and just go through like every facet of the game with everybody in the big room. Doug's way more like, hey, go to your rooms. Like, I'm going to worry about the offense. Like, so they have differences. I would rather play for Doug because of the scheme. And it's just that simple.
What
and
about
I can't
the person
remove...
as a leader? What about the person as a leader?
Asking a dad, like, what kid do you like more?
Right. Okay.
Or, like, what parent do you like more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... tough call?
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for both of them. I really do. And Bill, has texted me once or twice. After we beat them in the Super Bowl, I texted him, like, congrats on a great year.
Okay.
Appreciate you and all that. Because I never really got a chance to catch up with... Because when I decided to leave New England, the day of the parade was the last day I saw anybody. I knew I was out, and I was just like, hey, guys, I appreciate you, that whole thing. And I never really got to catch up with Bill. And Bill has always been super cool to me since.
All right. I kind of understand what you said. A couple more questions. Now, one of them is, did you miss and do you miss the game of football? Because you played it for so many years.
There will always be a part of me that's like the competitor in me. When I watch it, I know I can still play, which is like kind of makes it maybe easier or harder. Mm-hmm. So there's always going to be a part of me that when a big game comes on, I get a little bit like, I'd like to be out there. I'm watching guys make plays, and I know I can make those plays. But it's a little bit different watching Philly than watching like Houston or somewhere else. Like, half of retiring for me was because I didn't want to play anywhere else at the moment. I wanted to finish in Philly. Philly was so special to me. And if it wasn't going to work there, wasn't really trying to do anything else. So when I turn on a game and it's the Link or it's like the Eagles, I'm not going to lie, the last two games have been the first time I've really missed football. Like, actually, I could see myself going, putting myself through the car wrecks and all that every week for that payoff. I mean, those atmospheres are awesome. But I also know that I'd probably be frustrated with, you know, my role, and that would probably take away from some of the feeling. So, you know, life's about give and take, and there's always, the grass is always greener, whether you're playing, you dream about not playing and retirement, and then on the other end of it, you're going to think about playing sometimes.
When I saw you back in Philadelphia, it doesn't sound like you're bored with things. What are you doing now to keep yourself either active or energized to go through days that don't have football anymore?
Yeah, I'm very busy now. So I'm running a media company called Chalk. I do a podcast 2 times a week that people get tired of me talking up Carson and tell me how dumb I am on my podcast. And then we take the whole season of this thing called the Fishbowl. You can check us out on Chalk, Chalk Media on YouTube, and had a bunch of really great guests on. And so I'm running that thing and running the foundation, which still takes a lot of work. And
right.
You know, it's like a 9-to-5 plus. So I think my wife and family thought that I might be sitting around bored, but I think that's one of the biggest keys to retirement is not only how you go out. So check that box for me. I left it all on the field. I felt good about the last game. I played well. Like, so I my ego is not hurt there. But then also like just how you fill your time. And I think this fall I bit off more than I could really chew from a time commitment standpoint. I was like burnt out at times, but that's better than being bored. And I think that's a big key.
Hey, don't let those nitwits, those twidiots, and those morons talk you down on Carson. If people don't realize now how good a player he is, they are absolutely clueless.
Well, I'm really going to enjoy this being a Hallmark victory lap thing for me, that he continues to show people exactly what we already knew he is, and that's a really special talent. So I never bit the cheese, and I'm sorry for some of you out there who bit the cheese, but hey, there's other takes you can get right over the next calendar year, maybe in 2020.
Well, I'll say maybe to that with those nitwits. Hey, Chris,
yeah, you're right.
It's always fun. I know we'll always stay in touch, and I can't wait to see you again. And if you ever need anything, you know to get in touch with me.
Philly.
There you go. We'll never forget. Everybody's using that play now in college and pros. Everybody's using that play. It's the Eagles play.
Yep.
It's Philly.
Yep.
All right, genius. Take care. Have a happy New
easy,
Year,
Howard.
Too. Happy New Year.
I'll see you soon, buddy. Okay.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Chris said a lot of great things, he actually wouldn't bite on the Belichick thing. He obviously has respect, and he likes Bill Belichick, but you can tell that he really likes Doug Peterson. And the fact that this team has overachieved, and he made that comment, is really a testament. People blame the quarterback, but they tend not to give the quarterback enough of the credit. And I think that's wrong. And as Chris said, there's other people out there that bit the cheese. Their hot takes, all that nonsense with hot takes. The hot take is that Carson Wentz is a very good quarterback, and without him, the Eagles would not have won. Without Doug Peterson, the Eagles would not have won. I'll just touch briefly on the 76ers. Ben Simmons, and this is all I'm going to say, Benjamin, as I like to call him, because Benjamin doesn't have a J, he's got to develop more of a game. He has athletic ability, and Jason Williams of ESPN called them out by saying, when Charles Barkley called him out, so why do you have to have Charles Barkley and Shaq call you out? You got to do the things you got to do. I just don't think they're mentally – I think the 76ers are a mentally flawed team. I don't think they approach the games the way they need to approach them. They take too much time off during the games. Even the bad teams, you got to play well enough that you're not just going to give up big leads and create big deficits. So I think the 76ers team of last year is better than the 76ers team of this year. They don't have a shooter, and they need a shooter. And that's not Joel Embiid taking three-point shots. One game he took 12 three-point shots. That's a joke. That is an absolute joke. And Ben Simmons won't take a shot beyond – doesn't even take a shot at 10 feet. It's so ridiculous. So just wanted to address that. We'll talk about that more, but it was nice to talk to Chris Long and get his take. And it's an honest take on the things that happen in the locker room, go on in the locker room, and happen with the Eagles. I know Chris wanted to come back this year. I don't know how he would have fit this year, but he would have probably been frustrated because he probably wouldn't have had enough snaps. But he did want to. He had told me at one point he did want to come back this year, and it's never worked out with the Eagles. But again, thanks for being a part of the Howard Eskin podcast. You absolutely were riding with the king.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.